Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good morning, America. My wife Marnie and I just returned from a leadership conference in Washington, D.C. There was a very different atmosphere from what it was 4 years ago when we went to the same conference. Even our Uber driver from Pakistan said he was glad that Trump would be back in office. In fact, everywhere we went, there seemed to be an excitement in America, like America's back. This was true for younger, older, wealthy, middle class, across racial lines. Both men and women have felt that way. Now, Marnie and I have been attending this conference for almost 30 years. When I started, Bill Clinton was president. I don't think there has been this much excitement, maybe since Reagan. We've had 12 years of Bush, 8 years of Clinton, 8 years of Obama, 4 years of Biden, plus Trump's first term. A lot has changed in our nation over that period. The internet became a thing. Then we had the largest terror attack on our own soil, two wars, the rise of China as a superpower, and then the threat of China. We had a major financial panic in 2008. Mobile phones emerged and now dominate our lives. We've had a massive pandemic and shutdown of the whole world, and most recently, a massive invasion by illegal immigration, plus wars in Ukraine and Israel. It seems we've alternated between crisis and prosperity. The good news is that many Americans are optimistic that we can return to prosperity. The political climate is changing along with the mood of America and the weather as we're getting into the colder months. Joining me this morning is my best friend of 30 years who has been at my side through most of that change, my partner in life, the mother of my children, America's artist of liberty, my wife, Marnie. Good morning, sweetheart.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, this may be your first time on radio. Have you done radio before?
I've not done radio before, so...
I know you've done podcasts before. I know you've been on Glenn Beck's show before, but I'm just thrilled to have you here with me on Pirate Money Radio.
Well, thank you for having me on Pirate Money Radio.
Now, Mike Carter couldn't be with us this morning. He's traveling across the country to educate America on pirate money, and this is pre-recorded so I can spend the weekend doing my honey-do list, which I've got to pay you back for coming on to be my co-host here.
Yes, you do.
And, as well as some time with our daughter who will be home from college. Marnie, it's been quite a journey these past three decades.
It has been. It's been amazing. Enjoyed it.
Amazing and challenging and frightening and, yeah...
All the feelings, all of them, simultaneously.
Yeah. So what did you think about the conference in D.C.?
It was, I would say, electric. It was, people were happy. Worn out. We're all worn out, for sure. But we have to remember, do not grow weary in well-doing. But it was celebratory, and it was fun.
Yeah. We met some amazing people, spent some time with great friends. Frank Gaffney, who was just here. We had him on the Economic War Room show that we taped here. Right. We had breakfast with Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz's father, which was fun.
That was amazing.
He was staying at the same hotel. We heard amazing speakers like Vivek Ramaswamy and leading politicians. We met new friends like our guest this morning, Kathy Barnett from Pennsylvania. Marnie, you spotted her first.
I did. I saw her. She's a beautiful, beautiful lady.
And brilliant, too.
Brilliant.
Best-selling author, homeschool mom, most recently national grassroots director for Republican candidate at the time, Vivek Ramaswamy. Marnie, would you welcome Kathy to Pirate Money Radio?
Kathy, welcome. We are so excited you're here to join us. I've been looking forward to this. So, I mean, when I saw you, we sat next to each other at this conference, is how we met. So thank you for coming on and just joining us. You have a lot of great things to say. I've looked at all your, perused all your things and your interviews. It's just been fabulous. You're amazing. So let's just start right in.
Welcome.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you both for allowing me to, or asking me, offering me the opportunity to come on. I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you've had a few busy years and a long history of serving America in the Army National Guard, the Army Reserves, most recently working with Vivek Ramaswamy. You ran for Senate in Pennsylvania, and I think you would make a fabulous senator. And you've got a book titled Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. And yet you've put plenty on the line. You've had plenty to lose, actually, first in military service and then as a candidate and strategist. Could you share some of your journey? How'd you get, I mean, you're famous. You've got this great social media following. How'd you get where you are? Where did it start?
Oh, my goodness. Like, where do you begin? But you know what? Let me just start with, I appreciate you saying you had a lot to to lose. You put a lot on the line. I don't think most people understand, you know, running for office is a total body commitment. It is a total mind commitment. Your family life is a huge commitment there. And given the vitriolic culture of our politics today, you know, where people can lie on you and all of that, you really do put, if you're a good person coming in just wanting to do the best for your country, you really are putting a lot on the line. I completely understand why there's that mantra that good people don't want to run for office. I think it's a huge problem because our country, we need great people, good people, regular people to want to join the fight. So we have some work to do there. But for me, I'm just going to let you kind of, you know, ask me the question. I mean, my story is so long, I can go in all kinds of directions.
Well, the vice president said, I grew up in a middle class household, yeah, to a Marxist professor at Stanford. And then you lived in the Tony parts of Toronto, of Vancouver, I think it was, in Canada, and so forth. You did not have you had a modest upbringing, not a celebrated Stanford University professor's daughter's upbringing. Tell a little bit about your story and your mom.
Very true. I grew up on a pig farm in southern Alabama. I grew up in a one-stop sign town in a home with no insulation, no running water, an outhouse in the back, a well on the side. And I often say we were so poor, we couldn't afford the other O. We were just Po. But as a child, growing up in that environment, I was loved. I knew no difference. I was loved. I was cared for. You know, my grandmother would ask me to help her in the garden, and I thought she just wanted to spend quality time with me. And it wasn't until I grew up did I realize that, no, in large part, that was for our survival. If we wanted beans or peas or potatoes, we had to go out there and grow it. But as a child, again, I had no idea. You know, I often lament as I'm raising, my husband and I are raising our two kids today, that we are not able to give our kids the exact same kind of upbringing. I juxtapose how I grew up versus my children. And when I grew up, I don't remember anyone ever looking at me and saying, Kathy, you're black, you're poor, you're a woman, hang it up, kid, right? And I honestly had a lot of obstacles in front of me. Whereas today, my children, by the grace of God, I am not that little girl who grew up on a pig farm from an economic perspective any longer. I worked very hard to create, my husband and I, to create a life for ourselves. And so our children have had a wonderful upbringing that I'm very proud to have been able to give them. And yet, in today's culture, there are those who will look at my children at the color of their skin and say, you're a victim. Think of yourself as a victim, walk around like a victim, behave like a victim with your hand out into in perpetuity. I reject that. And I reject it in large part because of how I grew up. I know what poverty is. I didn't read about it from a book. I didn't look at a spreadsheet and memorize some numbers. I understand poverty because I grew up in that, in dire poverty. And yet I also know what I did to build a different life for myself. And I think that that is a much more advantageous message to teach people who find themselves under a rock.
Well, you did
looking for ways.
You did grow up in poverty, maybe economically, but you didn't grow up in poverty in terms of the important things, the spiritual things, the faith, the love of family, the respect for others. I mean, you've had a very hard beginning, but it was filled with love. I mean, you've got an amazing story. It's found in the book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain by Kathy Barnett. We're going to be taking a break here in a minute, but we're having an incredible conversation. Marnie Freeman, the incredible Mrs. Freeman, and I talking with Kathy Barnett about her book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, and how we can help make America a better place. We'll be right back after this break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and I'm joined. I'm just so honored and pleased to have my beautiful wife here joining me. Marnie and I have been married, you know, almost 30 years, and we've certainly been dating and married for that length of time. It's just a joy to have
you here. It's not been that long, right?
It doesn't feel that long.
I know. It's too fast. I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Well, you know, I'll just propose to you right here, and we'll have a wedding on the show.
Let's do it.
And we're joined by a guest, Kathy Barnett, who's an incredible woman. I speed read her book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, last night. And as I reflect on the election, we just got back from a conference where we're talking about, well, how did, you know, the South vote? How did people of color vote? How did women vote? How did women between the ages of 15 and 35 vote and all of that? And it looked like Trump picked up in almost every demographic, almost every county, everything from where he was 4 years ago.
He did.
And, you know, the thing that struck me, somebody said, we just assume that everybody's monolithic in one issue. For example, women. Well, there's the whole Joe Biden. Unless you're voting for me, you ain't black, as he told Charlemagne the God. And women, unless you're pro-choice, you know, you got to vote for Harris because you're a woman. You have to do that. You didn't feel that to be true, did you?
I did not feel that to be true. And I know that Kathy has said in some of her recent interviews, she said something, and I couldn't find the quote again, but basically we're more than our uteruses and our ovaries. Sorry, that may be TMI, but we are more than that. So, Kathy, I know that if you could expand on, it's really a great quote, but if you could expand more on why, we are more than just that, but also your stance on, pro-life issues, those types of things.
Yeah, you know, well, we understand why political consultants want to group people into little boxes. Oh, you're black, so you behave this way. Oh, you're a suburban woman, so this is who you are. Oh, you're educated, college educated, not college educated, which is such an insult to people, you know, because it's easier for them to divide us and to control us. But I have always been a firm believer of figuring out who I am, why I'm here, what it is I'm supposed to be doing with my life, and then setting about the business of doing it. And that comes with, you know, my own story of how I was conceived. I was actually watching Lila Rose came to Pennsylvania, and she did a kind of a street event because there was a Democrat politician who was mocking Catholics who were praying outside of a pregnancy of an abortion center. And so Lila Rose came in protest of that particular Democrat representative here in Pennsylvania. She had, it looked like hundreds of people standing outside, and she had one speaker after another sharing their story. And as I heard these women talk about how they aborted their child and for the reason at the time they decided to do so, but how today they lament over that decision, I just felt such a conviction that if my story had the ability to save one life, why would I not share it? And at that point in my 40s, I had never shared my story publicly. But I happened to be a writer for Fox News up in New York. And so I asked if I could share my story, and the rest is history. And my story is that I am the byproduct of a rape. My mother was 11 years old when I was conceived. My father was 21. And although I've told this story so many times, it is still it's a personal story. It's my story. And although I do not, I have never glorified how I was conceived, I'm grateful that I'm here. And I'm grateful that by the grace of God that, you know, from me has come a wonderful marriage to an amazing man and two adorable kids who are so smart, so kind. And our nation is going to be better as a result of them entering into our society as functioning adults. And all of that, if you understand science, real science, not that Dr. Fauci science, if you understand real science, then you know that none of this, nothing that I've contributed to the world would exist had the people around my young mom and I had not seen value in my life. And I'm so grateful to my grandparents who saw value in my life. And I know that not only from my conception did they see value in my life and my mother's womb, but as I stated earlier, I grew up feeling loved and protected and valued. And so they have certainly, did their part in making sure that I was a healthy young woman growing up. And so that's my story. That's the reason why I am vehemently pro-life and believe that these are the most innocent Americans, innocent lives that there are. And it's our responsibility to understand that and to speak up against the murder of them.
Well, there's no question the world would be poorer if you were not in it. And we're grateful that you are here. And of course, anybody would stop and say 11-year-old, we don't believe in abortion except, 11-year-old or the product of rape. But here it is, a life, a beautiful life. And your mom and your grandparents, number one, saying, of course we're going to raise this beautiful girl. Of course we're going to have her. And now the impact that you're having on the world. I mean, you really are a powerful and important voice for truth, for God. I mean, you've got scripture throughout your book. I loved it when I was reading it. And history and all of that. And yet you're also brilliant on policy.
Oh, my goodness, she is. I mean, you can look at all of her stances. She actually has that posted on our website, all of her stances and why. So it's great. Go visit her website.
Oh, I'd go through the U.S. Senate, and I would pull a large number of them out to trade for you, yeah. Kathy, if we could put you in the Senate right now. But, and then you talk about things that matter to us. I mean, we've had Ben Carson, Dr. Carson on our program, not Pirate Money Radio, but Economic War Room multiple times. And we've had some, just incredible voices from the Black community. Ben Carson, Alan West, Star Parker, E.W. Jackson, Larry Elder, and so forth have all been on our program. But you're echoing Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver, and you're teaching Black history, not because it needs to be taught separately, but because it's American history.
That's right.
And you make that point.
Yes.
It is. I mean, I understand, especially as, and you will identify with this, I'm sure, that, as a woman, I see the world differently than as a man, right? As a woman, there are certain places I will go and won't go. There's a particular style of sitting. They're the reason why women get up like a pack and go to the restroom together. I'm short, or I hate the fact that I'm short, but I'm short.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yes, right? And so we approach shelves differently than others, who are long or tall.
True.
And the same way as being a Black person, yes, clearly, and then growing up in the Deep South, there's a reason why I put the emphasis on the Deep South. So I do have a perspective on life, whether it's because I'm a woman, how that has defined me and how I see the world, or the fact that I'm Black. And yes, that pours into how I see the world. There's a particular lens that I have. There's a reason why when Black people see police officers pulling a Black person over on the road, we all pause and turn around to take a second glance, right?
Of course.
But then, so you understand those prejudices or those proclivities that we
right.
all have. And that does not mean that you're a bad person unless I use that to say, now every police officer I see is a bad police officer. And every white person I see is going to interact with me in a particular way. That's myopic and that's ridiculous. That's not how we interact with people as we move throughout the world. But in order to have that balance in our conversations, you have to pause, you have to listen to people, you have to think really hard about some things. And that's intimidating to a lot of people. It's so much easier for me, as we started off, to say, you're a woman, so you must want abortion to be legal, and you decide, you know, even to the point of birth. Oh, you're Black, then you must be a Democrat. It's such a sophomoric way of walking through life versus recognizing that, yes, I'm a woman. But there's so much more to me than just being a woman. Yes, I'm Black. And yes, that means something to me. But I'm not just Black.
As you've said before, if your boat rises, my boat rises, everyone's boats rise as we all rise together. So, and that's your mantra,
right?
Really.
Yeah, you know, because right now, you know, especially in social media and some of the circles in which I'm walking in, Black people are having a lot of conversation about Black issues, and we need Black people to talk about Black issues and Black policies and Black remedies, and we need more Black. And I'm like, okay, listen, I get it. But at the end of the day, every time I have heard someone talk about Black issues, Black policies, Black solutions, it does not benefit Black people. Who it benefits is a small group of grifters who find a way to monetize the misery of other people. And so you have to be able to see that, recognize it, and say, okay, I want different. And how do I want different? Well, let me prioritize what's important to me. And quite frankly, a secure border doesn't just protect white people, but it protects me and my Black home with my Black family. It protects the Asian. It protects the Hispanics. It protects the Indians. It protects all of us to have a secure border, low inflation, or unleashing our energy. That securing ourselves, not entering into World War III with Russia, doing what we need to do to stymie China. Those things are not just white people policies, but it's American policies, and it benefits all of us. And that is what I'm focused on.
Right. So we've got a lot to talk about: the border, the debt, life issue, economic liberty, health and health care, education, welfare policy, freedom issues, crime, economic justice. We were going to get your perspective, Kathy, on each of these. We're going to have to take another short break. When we come back, though, I'd like to walk through these things plus economic justice. We'll be right back after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And the infamous Mrs. Freeman, Marnie Freeman, who's here with me. We're talking with our guest, Kathy Barnett, who's written an incredible book that everybody needs to read, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. We're talking policy issues. And Kathy's made the point that, look, there may be a perspective from someone who's grown up in the Deep South that's Black, that and so forth, but that doesn't change that we want a secure border with the things that we share in common. There may be differences, for example, in healthcare. In terms of healthcare, if you have a certain ethnicity or whatever, you will face differing health problems from others. It's just in genetics. Some people are predisposed to some things that aren't disposed to others, but everybody wants good healthcare for everybody. We want to be healthy and have a great society. We want economic freedom. Inflation hurts, you know, all except for the very wealthy who profit from it, which is what we talk about in Pirate Money, economic injustice. And by the way, there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, spend it, or invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room, that's our television show, and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And Marnie, don't we have the most amazing guest today?
We do. I'm enjoying this so much.
Hey, Kathy, we're so glad that you joined us. Pick your favorite topic and tell us what you think that we can look forward to. I mean, you worked with Vivek Ramaswamy, who was one of the great candidates for president. Now he with Elon Musk are heading up DOGE, the Department of Government and Efficiency. What can we look forward to them and the Trump administration?
Oh, my goodness. The sky is the limit. There is so much rot and corruption throughout our government. I mean, you can just, you know, like trying to pick up an issue is like trying to drink water from a fire hydrant at this point. There's just so much.
Well, you were national grassroots director, which is quite the position for Vivek, who came out of nowhere to the American people. But he's a successful businessman, entrepreneur, and probably one of the smartest people I've ever heard give a speech. I mean, it's just incredible. And he picked you to be his national grassroots director. So you got to know him personally. Is he the real deal?
He is. You know, like I've done so many interviews, and some of the first questions people ask, you know, tell me about Vivek. And I know, you know, and as you rightly stated, he is brilliant. He's so smart. And yes, that is absolutely a very strong attribute about Vivek. However, the first thing I think about, because I spent so much time with him, is that just how kind he is. He is like, it's one of the first characteristics that come to mind. He is so kind, humble to be someone as young and as smart and as successful. Humble meaning, you know, willing to listen, willing to be wrong. He wants to have the conversation. And I found him to be open to being, you know, persuaded differently. And that is something that you see out there. When I think about, you know, some of the issues, one of the things you talked about was, what was it when we went to the break, you said economic
justice.
Yeah, you know, like that is something people talk about. It's certainly something within the Black community that we talk about. And, you know, and I would ask people to listen to the whole interview, the one that I did with you right before this particular segment, when I talked about, yes, you know, we have to have balance when we're having these conversations. Of course, we understand, you know, and, 1776, we declare independence, 1787, we write the Constitution, but it wasn't until 1863 did Abraham Lincoln put forward the Emancipation Proclamation, and it was 101 years later before we have the Civil Rights Bill. So we go from 1863 to 1964 before we said, Okay. Let's get rid of Jim Crow laws. Let's talk about education and the equality of education. That's 101 years. And even before that, you know, from the foundation of this country, that even our founding fathers have slaves. And so, you know, so we can see that. We can acknowledge that. It was, I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was Daniel Moynihan, the famous Daniel Moynihan, who said, you know, in 1863, slaves were given their freedom, but not equality. And it took 101 years later before we got set on the road to equality. Doesn't mean we've achieved it. And I don't believe we probably ever will achieve it. But I believe by the time Obama got into office as a nation, we had gotten pretty darn close. So much so that, you know, coming from where I grew up, going to college, in the military, working in the financial industry, A.G. Edwards, Bank of America, Capital Asset Management, adjunct professor of corporate finance, author of my first book that went number one on Amazon, running for Senate, I felt during all of that if someone did not like me because of the color of my skin, that was more their problem than it was my problem.
No question.
That it wasn't it was their problem, not my problem, right? Because our country had done a lot to right many of their wrongs. But it really was during the term of Obama that I began to see a pivot that only exacerbated itself after 2018 and 2020, where, and I was talking to, you mentioned his name, Dr. Ben Carlson. We both have some similarities in how we grew up in dire poverty. And I asked him, do you believe that if you were that little boy growing up in the hood in dire poverty today, do you believe you would be who you are now? And he said no. He said he believed it would be so much harder for him to pull himself out of dire poverty today. It would be harder today for him to pull himself out of dire poverty than back then when he did. And likewise for myself, I earnestly believe it'll be a little bit more challenging today for me to be able to build a life outside of that pig farm than it was back then when I was doing it. And a lot of it is because of the policies and the attitudes that is so prevalent today. One being, you know, a victim. And let's assume these people are magnanimous in their desire to help us. I don't believe they are, but let's assume that many of these people are. We are flawed human beings. And when flawed human beings try to create utopia, it doesn't tend to work out very well for the majority of us.
Well, let's just look at that history. So coming off of the Emancipation Proclamation, then 101 years later, we have the Civil Rights Act, which provides equality. During that period, Black America that started with absolutely nothing, and yet they were electing members of Congress who were Republican. They were so prospering that they had to create these laws to keep them, the Jim Crow laws and others. Marty and I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the location of Black Wall Street, where before the civil rights legislation, before they were given any even equality, let alone, you know, any treatment at all from the government, they were basically ignored. They put the principles of family, the Bible, and truth, and loving community, the things that you grew up with, they put those into practice, and they prospered and succeeded more than the surrounding white communities.
Absolutely.
In Tulsa.
Absolutely.
So that's, and yet then 1964 to the Great Society under Lyndon Johnson just a few years later, which really was put a negative. And I've read some of this in your book, and I've seen it in experience, and I saw it with my life. The Great Society was the first step of harming Black America and minorities, and then the second was during the Obama administration. Do you want to comment on what the Great Society did?
Yeah, it's exactly what you just said, and that's 60 years. This year made 60 years of Lyndon B. Johnson Great Society idea. And it was a package of hundreds, like over 100 different laws that were passed in this package that was supposed to make Black people lives better. And now 60 years later, you look at a government poll that measures anything positive about different races of people in our country, and Black people are always at the bottom of that list. You pick a list where our government is measuring something positive, Black people, specifically Black men, are at the bottom of that list. You pick a list where the government says something is measuring something positive, and Black people are always at the bottom. Something negative, Black people are always at the top. And I believe that this is, you know, there's an awakening that we saw with this past election with Donald Trump. Black people, specifically Black men, are sick and tired of being sick and tired. Men across the board in this nation are sick and tired of being punked and bullied into submission. I think we saw a lot of that. But specifically among Black men, they want better. I saw that in 2022 when I ran for office. I was the one who took Vivek Ramaswamy into the South Side of Chicago and other predominantly Black communities. And every time I took him into these communities, it was standing room only, overwhelmingly Black men. They wanted something different. They wanted something better. And that is my message to Black people. I would often in 2020 show up at Black Lives Matter rallies, they would never invite me. So I would just show up, walk up on the stage, and I'm like, what are you going to do? I'm Black. And I would start talking. And Black people are not special little unicorns. We want what everyone else wants. Do you want safe streets? Do you want good jobs? Do you want to send your kids to a good school? Guess what? Black people want that as well. The problem is, within the Republican Party, we really don't have an interest of going into these Black communities and making that case. Donald Trump was the first person I had ever seen actually make a case and a plan tangible. He didn't bring Beyonce, Jay-Z, and Megan Thee Stallion on stage. He brought Black opportunity or Black economic zones or economic zones and different program. I believe it's called the Black Opportunity Program. I can't remember. With viable ideas. That is what Black people were responding to. Black people, many Black people, specifically Black men, are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they want better.
Well, you've made that case, Kathy. Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. That's the name of your best-selling book. It's a phenomenal book. I read it last night. I couldn't put it down. We'll be right back with Kathy Barnett. More after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And my beautiful co-host, the wonderful Marnie Freeman, and our fabulous guest, Kathy Barnett, the author of the book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. Kathy, right before the break, as you were talking, I was hearing Dr. Phil shouting in my head. So how's that working for you regarding policy?
I was so thinking that.
And then I think about the Nigerians that have come over as immigrants in the last 20 or 30 years that haven't had this history. They haven't had the you know, basically Dr. Carson would say it. Dr. Carson was not allowed to sit and draw money and watch cartoons. His mother forced him to read and get out there and work hard and everything else. And your upbringing, Kathy, forced you to get out there and work hard. It wasn't handouts. It was opportunity that helped you. So your book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, that's an argument for giving opportunity for individuals and not trying to buy off communities for votes, right?
Yes. You know, going back to what you were asking in the previous segment about Lyndon B. Johnson, I mean, it was Lyndon B. Johnson's Great Society idea that brought into, that flooded the Black community with this concept of welfare, which is aided in creating a generational cycle of this egregious image of the strong Black woman who is single and oftentimes dependent on the government for aid and whose children frequently have more than one father. It's those welfare policies of the 1960s that was ushered in by Lyndon B. Johnson and the Democrat Party, not racism or a lack of jobs or the legacy of slavery, that has caused this great dysfunction within the Black community. And I know we walk around pretending, you know, that you're not supposed to say these things out loud, but the, you know, the unfortunate truth is that our dirty laundry is getting off of these school buses every day. And our dirty laundry is walking up and down these streets, creating chaos and havoc. And we have to do better as a people. I believe a lot of that is going to be reflected, you know, as I think to my conversation with Vivek. Again, he came here, or his parents came here with very little. And he did not grow up very wealthy. And yet, look at what this young man has done. I mean, there's a reason why nations all across this world is trying to get into this country. Because of our opportunities, if you want to do better and you're not being fed a constant diet of victimhood. Like, just for example, you know, I was in my book, I talk about, you know, home ownership is one of, you know, for most Americans, it is the source of our greatest wealth. And so generally, you want to become a homeowner. But between 1968, Black people, the percentage of Black people who owned homes was 41.1%. Today, it's 41.2%. So with all the money, all the subsidies, all the policies, all the things that Democrats have promised to the Black community, our situation has not improved very much whatsoever. And those people from 1968 and before dealt with real acts of racism. I've never been told to get up and go to the back of the bus. My children, I was not bred as a business strategy, and my baby sold off to the highest bidder. I don't understand any of that, except from an intellectual perspective. I can understand it, you know, from an intelligence perspective, from a cognitive perspective, but I never lived through that. And yet those particular people had gone from not even owning, being told they're free, not even owning their own last name, and got to a point where 41.1% of them were owning their own home. Today, 41.2% of us own our own home. We haven't moved the needle very much in a generation that has been given so much.
We spent something like $25 trillion in the war on poverty, which accounts for the vast majority of our $36 trillion in debt. And yet our children and grandchildren are going to have to pay for it, either from the form of inflation, which hurts everybody, unless you're the very, very wealthy. If you're wealthy, if you're Elon Musk, there's a way to invest and profit from inflation. I can show you. I've been an investment advisor for 40 years. But the average person, they have no economic justice. That's why, you know, the producer, Russell, told me, be sure and bring pirate money into it. The reason we mentioned pirate money is because it's biblical money, it's sound money, it's gold and silver, not just printing paper. And I think we may have given you a copy. If not, I want to get you a copy of Pirate Money, because we believe in economic justice. I mean, I grew up in a Cherokee household, and economic justice matters to us also, as it does everybody. Economic justice, it should. Freedom issues, crime, these are the key issues that matter. And when you mentioned 41.2% owning homes, an increase of 0.1%, how about the stock market? How about, you know, the average person, why can't they afford to invest in the stock market? Or when they do, all the great opportunities are in private equity markets now. They're no longer in the stock market.
Maybe they don't have the threshold of money to do it, or it's just too darn difficult.
It's too darn difficult, or they don't have, you know, if I've got an extra $1,000, I've got to set it aside in case the washing machine breaks down. I don't have a choice to, you know, or the car, or my kid needs sneakers, or, you know, yeah. I don't have a choice to throw away an extra $1,000 in the stock market or whatever. We need to get back to economic justice. And I think Trump's policies are going to do that. But you're a policy wonk. You're an expert. What are your thoughts on what we ought to do? We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. What should we be doing in this Trump administration? What would you set as priorities, Kathy?
I mean, Doge. It's all about Doge, right? Mm. It sits outside of the executive branch, although it will be reporting to Donald Trump. And I mean, if we want to unleash the economic capability of this country, we got to get in there and begin to gut and to streamline and to just do away with some of these entities, i.e. the Department of Education. Like the NAACP, I believe the Department of Education has lived beyond its point of usefulness. Growing up in the deep south of Alabama, I understand from a historical perspective why we needed the Department of Education, but like the NAACP, their point of usefulness has come and gone, and now they're making up reasons on why they need to exist. And the reasons they're making up is that to teach, to groom our children, to demoralize our babies, to sexually exploit our children. It is just utterly ridiculous. So let's start there, but then let's move quickly to the EPA and their grip on our ability to create energy, to produce energy. That is going to significantly impact the American people at their kitchen table. Going right over to the FBI and the weaponization, you know, almost over a third of those who work in the FBI building are just back office people, just dreaming up ways to make the rest of our lives miserable. So let's take the 35,000 Americans who are actually doing the work of the FBI, and we can move them into other areas. Vivek has done a brilliant job of explaining that. But before we leave, allow me to just put out a disclaimer that my purpose of talking about the Black community is not to stand over the Black community and to beat it up any more than it's already been beaten up. My purpose of speaking about the Black community is because in order to deal with an issue, you have to recognize you have a problem. That was the purpose of my book. And my book is reading like prophecy in that I said in 2019 and 2020 that if we lose 2020 election and any election thereafter, 2022 and so forth, that what we see with what the Democrats have done to the Black community, you can look at the Black community like a petri dish of what happens when Democrats come in and take utter control of everything. They leave the people broke, broken, and bruised. And I warned, if we do not begin to win and offer a better solution to the American people, and we allow Democrats to gain control of all the systems, what we see in the Black community will begin to spill out of the Black community and begin to impact the broader American culture. And I did not lie. Look at how far we've fallen. So much so, we can't even define what a woman is. We are now having 15-year-olds cut off healthy breasts, remove healthy uteruses, and we're all supposed to just stand around and say, yep, that's normal. It's not normal. It is sheer evil. But this is what happens when the Democrat Party is allowed to spread. They are a virus. And we need to recognize, and my whole family are Democrats. They're all Black. Pray for them. But it's that communist mind virus that has taken root within the Democrat Party. We need to put a spotlight on it and expose it for what it is.
Yeah, well, my mom was a Democrat. I understand. You know, she came from an Irish home where you had to be a Democrat. But here's the truth. And Kathy, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
We so appreciate you. The truth is that if we treat individuals and people, we understand they all come from somewhere, and everybody has a background. And I happen to have a Y chromosome, and Marnie, you don't have a Y chromosome. So
I do not.
So we're different, but we're together, and we see a light. We need to be treated as individuals. Kathy Barnett's got a beautiful book. It's well written. It explains it so well, titled Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. And everybody ought to get a copy of this book. If you're part of our AFR audience, then you can listen to us on American Family Radio or on their podcast. If you have any questions or any comments about our program, write to us at AFR at piratemoneyradio.com. That's AFR at piratemoneyradio.com. And you can get us on Apple, Spotify, or piratemoneyradio.com. Help us spread the word. Help us build our audience. Share this episode. Kathy's brilliant with your friends and family. And Marnie, thank you so much for being a part of Pirate Money Radio. And thank you, Kathy. God bless you all. Till next week, this is Kevin Freeman and Pirate Money Radio.